Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech, driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Alexis Fink and Emily Hudson.
Hi, this is Emily Hudson.
And this is Alexis Fink.
And welcome to the Intel on AI podcast. Today, we're joined by James Jacobs, the co-founder and co-CEO of Ziva Dynamics. Welcome, James.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Do you want to give us a little bit more background on Ziva Dynamics?
So Ziva is a software company that's sort of focused on creating tools in order to make great characters. And we've been around since April 2015, and we focused on servicing primarily the film and game industries with being able to offer them tools and technologies in order to make best-in-class creatures, characters, what have you.
Have there been any recent releases involving Ziva Dynamics that we can check out your work?
Sure. Our work was probably most recently focused in The Meg, which was a film that was out this summer, and actually it's going to be highlighted in, we'll be presenting at the Intel booth at CES in January about the involvement of our technology in the creation of The Meg.
Excellent. So you've been around since 2015. In the 3 years you've been doing this, how has technology changed?
It's evolved quite a lot in that time. When we first started the company, we did have the vision to be able to create compelling interactive characters. But the path to create compelling, realistic, interactive characters first requires that you get the answers right. And to do that, we had to focus on creating a result which is as accurate as possible, which at that point, we sacrificed speed for accuracy. So we've spent the majority of the first 3 years really focusing on that solution, and that's our offline simulator, which is also built on top of libraries inside of the Intel AI banner, most notably the MKL library, which we use for all our linear algebra. And that bit of technology is focused on creating accurate representations of materials like soft tissue, like muscles, fat, skin, and to be able to represent them in a realistic way, given the specific motions that you give your character or creature. The other bits of technology that we sort of circled at the time and we've done exploratory investigations on are to then be able to harvest the results of our offline simulator in order to create interactive characters which look and act like their offline counterparts. And that uses machine learning in order to do that. So essentially, we'll take the results of numerous simulations which have been pre-computed, we'll ingest that as training data into our real-time solution, and then out of the output of that is a real-time character which looks and acts like the offline one but can run at interactive rates.
So that's fascinating. You actually used simulations to build artificial skeletons and muscles and flesh and fat and hair and all of that, and then use that to create the training data for the final product. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it ends up being a really great symbiosis between these two approaches because it's very difficult. I mean, anyone that's sort of working in the space of machine learning quickly becomes familiar with how challenging it is in order to get high-quality training data that can properly cover the domain that you're trying to represent. And by using a simulator in order to feed that, we can on-demand generate new training data if we find that part of the domain isn't well represented.
Okay, so that's a really huge problem. Is that something that you can do quickly now rather than taking months or years to carefully and painstakingly build, render, and capture those?
Yeah, it's been an iterative process. And when we first started, we saw certain verticals that we were interested in the fashion space. And rather than force the team to look at a virtual representation of myself, I thought it was better for us to cast someone whose professional living is their appearance. So we did cast a professional model and we had her, she was a great sport and allowed us to put her in a full body MRI machine. We had her externally scanned, motion captured, and we captured as much information about her as possible. But with the third bit of technology that we focused on, which I hadn't really mentioned yet, is we were able to then leverage everything that we learned from this one subject and then be able to warp and fit that to other people. And then that allows us to then refine this model again and again. So we're probably on like the 50th iteration of our anatomical model at this point. And each iteration, it ends up getting better, faster, more accurate, and the process gets more streamlined.
So how does that anatomical model in her full suit turn into a giant prehistoric shark?
Well, in the case of the shark, our customer Scanline made a bespoke anatomy for that shark. So they went to the literature and looked at what shark muscles look like and how they're attached. And sharks are significantly different than humans. They have obviously a lot more cartilage, more teeth, they're fish. But what is the same between both humans and sharks is that the properties of the anatomical tissues are things that you can measure and you can represent with a simulator. So in the case of the shark, they modeled the shark to the scale that they were wanting to create. So it's a megalodon, so it's a really huge shark, and it's something which you can't just go out and photograph today. But there is a fair amount of research around the size and shape and what the material properties might be for an animal like that. And they modeled the anatomy as they believe it was in that specimen and adjusted the material parameters in order to be a good representation of what that creature would have been like, and then just run it through the simulator.
So the movie is by no means a documentary, but it is actually grounded in solid science and simulation of what this creature would have been like in prehistory.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, though, because it is a film, we have made certain features in the software that do allow you to bend the laws of nature a little bit for, you know, if they need to create a scene that has extra impact, then we've added capabilities to remove momentum from systems so that if the shot demands it, the animation could occur at accelerations that are unrealistic and stuff like that. But generally, it's about trying to accurately and faithfully represent the real thing and then only bend the laws where it's absolutely required.
Now, I understand the Meg was a project that was a long time being developed by Warner Brothers. It sounds like your AI advancements are really key to bringing this movie to the screen. And now I believe that the Meg is available on video. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can go do that from the privacy of your own home.
Yep. And I had the good fortune of being able to see the film down at Warner Brothers, and I highly enjoyed it.
What's next for Ziva?
Well, again, we're a software provider, so a lot of our customers are constantly working on different projects, and we don't necessarily have visibility on that. Normally, we'll get called in if they want some consultation or if there's specific features that are requested of the software in order for them to achieve certain ends. And if we're lucky, we'll get some visibility on the projects just out of expediency, or if there's some benefit to the production team for us to have that sort of visibility. But as far as we know, there's tons of projects going on right now using our software that we're completely ignorant about.
James, I know that Ziva is behind the scenes typically involved in these big pictures, but I also know that at the upcoming CES event in January, you'll have a chance to be a bit more front and center as you join Intel as a spotlight presenter in our booth. So for any podcast listeners that are attending CES, please do come and check out Ziva Dynamics speaking at our Intel booth.
Excellent. You focus primarily on the entertainment industry. Do you see other broader applications where we can be using, we as an industry or you as an organization, can be using the underlying math, the simulations, the artificial intelligence that you've developed for the entertainment industry? Can you use that in other applications? What do you see coming forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, us as a company, right from day one, we saw that there was a much wider application for the technology, which we initially sort of focused in entertainment because that's the domain that a good portion of the teams had prior experience in. But when we cast a professional model to be our generic person that we wanted to learn something about, that was with an eye towards the fashion industry. And as a company, we do engage in enterprise relationships with companies that allow us to prove out new markets for the application of our technology. And that is one of the spaces where having a virtual human is a really useful one.
So just out of curiosity, you're not doing this with a desktop sitting right next to you. How much compute power does it take to actually build these simulations and then train the models and execute the real-time delivery of how these characters or models or renderings of dresses in the future, et cetera? How much compute power does it take to actually pull this off?
It really does depend upon when you need to deliver the project to a large part. I mean, we've really benefited from the fact that, you know, modern computers are incredibly powerful and they're really great at parallel processing. So we can throw a whole bunch of work on like a workstation, an average workstation now might have 18 cores, which is pretty substantial, especially like if I think back to what machines are like when I started out and doing this professionally in the mid-90s. It's pretty shocking where we are now. But if time is of the essence, this stuff scales quite well, and we will run our jobs on typically like Intel-based servers. The one that we have in the office here has, I think, 108 physical cores on it, and we can run several jobs on that concurrently, which helps us to speed up the process of generating, you know, getting either results for shots that we're computing or generating a whole bunch of training data in parallel.
I understand you're part of the AI Builders Program. Can you talk at all about how that has been able to help you with development of your infrastructure?
Yeah, it's a really great program that's really helped us not only to better leverage the technology, the underlying technology that we're using. You know, we've been given some good pointers about how we might want to adjust some of the ways that we're interacting with some of the underlying linear algebra libraries, but also towards some of the objectives that we have coming up into next year, where we'll be leveraging more deeply some of the newer capabilities that Intel AI frameworks make available to us.
James, thanks so much for your time today. This has been a really fascinating conversation. Can you tell our audience where they could go for more information on Ziva Dynamics?
Absolutely. Our website, www.zivadynamics.com, is probably the best place to go. Otherwise, just search for us and you'll probably come across a number of articles about the work that features our technology.
Thanks so much, James. This is Emily Hudson.
And this is Alexis Fink.
And you're listening to Intel on AI.